Welcome to Shattering Myths. I'm just bewildered by how stupid someone can be. Now, I have to admit, Ben Carson has an MD. He's a neurosurgeon. To be a neurosurgeon, and to be an acclaimed neurosurgeon, one you would think would have to be reasonably smart. But I've long said that being smart and being wise seldom have anything in common. You know, a professor who has endured either the 3, 4, 5, or 6 year indentured servitude, slave experience to earn a PhD is smart. You know, you've got to pass classes, you've got to pass tests, you've got to be smart, but I'm not sure that there are scholars who understand the subjects that they are teaching. Now, in the case of Ben Carson, he has made some of the dumbest statements I've ever heard. Please.
Just because you're smart in one area does not mean you're smart in every area.
You could be really smart in the in English grammar and not know how to weave sentences together in a manner that can communicate anything that's reasonable or rational. You can be very smart in human history and yet not be able to form any conclusions about the institutions of humanity. In the case of Ben Carson, his latest statement, and this is, it just says, how can you be the most popular candidate for Republican nomination for president and say something this stupid? I mean, it's just flabbergasting. Dateline Washington. Egypt's pyramids were built by the biblical Joseph to store grain and were not, as archaeologists believe, tombs for the pharaohs. Good God, Ben Carson. I once read, it is better to keep your mouth shut and seem stupid than it is to open your mouth and remove all doubt. The pyramids were built before the Exodus, long before Joseph. The pyramids are solid. There are very, very small doorways placed in a very difficult place within the pyramids to find that are extremely narrow so that the doorways are not found, and that so it is very difficult to get in anything in or anything out. And that the amount of storage space within these giant buildings, I mean, these are some of the largest buildings ever built by ancient man, if not the largest. The amount of open storage space for the structure of the buildings is about 1%. I'm not even sure it's 1%. It's probably less than 1% open storage space for the pharaoh's carcass, mummy, and his toys, and his possessions. Can you imagine designing a grain storage place that is filled with a sarcophagus? In the main chamber, it's filled with a sarcophagus, and it has what you can see is the place where treasures would have been stored. And to do that in a building where 1% of the space is can be used for storage, and where it is just almost extraordinarily difficult to access. And this moron thinks the pyramids were built for the storage of grain. Listen, there is a book written by David Roll. It's called It's About Time. And he demonstrates that at the time of Yosef, that based upon the evidence of the Nile flooding and then being drought years, that in the 14 years after the time that Yosef was in Egypt, that there was extraordinarily perfect years for crops in the Nile Delta, followed by 7 years of horrific conditions. And then he tied that to the agrarian reform that is known to us from the hieroglyphics and the left on these monuments by the Egyptians, that they went through a period of very substantial agrarian reform, and that he has unearthed and located enormous storehouses of grain that were used by the Egyptians during this period of time. He's even found the home that the Pharaoh gave to Yosef after what he had predicted based upon Yahweh's insights proved to be true, and he saved the Egyptian people from starvation. All of that has been found. None of it had anything to do with the pyramids. I mean, you just have to be stunningly stupid to make these kinds of claims. And this is a man that, I mean, can you imagine him in a debate if he's capable of saying something that stupid? I mean, he went on to say, my own personal theory is that Joseph built the pyramids to store grain. Now, all archaeologists think that they were made for the pharaohs. Yeah, as graves. Yes, they do, because they are graves for the pharaohs. That is what they are. That's what the writing on them says. But, you know, it would have to be something awfully big if you stop to think about it. And I don't think I'd just disappear over the course of time to store that much grain. I don't think it would just disappear over the course of time to store that much grain. They found the channels that Yosef had the Egyptians dig to route the grain into storehouses that wouldn't be flooded. They found them. They aren't the pyramids. Oh, my goodness. Carson added, when you look at the way the pyramids are made, with many chambers that are hermetically sealed, they're not hermetically sealed, and they have very few chambers. They'd have to be that way for various reasons. And various scientists have said, well, you know, there were alien beings that came down and that have special knowledge, and that's how you know it doesn't require an alien being when God is with you. Do you think that God was with the Egyptians? Do you think that God built a pyramid honoring Amen-Ra? Do you think that God built a tomb where all of the writings on that tomb and the sarcophagus in it is for a man who claimed to be the Son of God? I mean, it's criminal how unbelievably stupid Americans are to have favored this man to run for the president of the United States. Shame on us. I mean, it's one thing that you have a third of Americans all enamored with Bernie Sanders, an avowed socialist who is actually a communist, and you aren't moral enough to know that stealing from those who have earned their money to lavish you with something you haven't earned is not an economic policy. It's simply thievery. And it won't work. It hasn't worked. It bankrupts the recipient. It bankrupts the provider. But it's another thing altogether that you Christian Republicans are all in a slather over the Seventh-day Adventist who says some of the dumbest things that ever came out of the mouth of a man. What's wrong with you? You know, I've said on several occasions that my time now on this program is coming to an end. It will probably come in at some time late this month, and we'll come up with another venue or means to communicate not quite as frequently. And that there are two reasons for doing it, one of which I've announced, and that is that I'm just not comfortable being, I don't think it's appropriate to be in a venue that hawks the military Bible stick and Save America campaign through the military's adoption of a pyramid scheme in longevity. I just I know that you don't go into a church, you don't go into a mosque to declare Yahweh's testimony. That's the place. That's the place you ought not go. And so I ought not be in a place that is hawking such wares. But the other reason is, quite frankly, I don't know what I can say to get people to wake up, to stand up, to shed their apathy. You know, in the Proverbs 6 that we're going to return to in the second hour today, you know, God even questions, says, what is it going to take for you to stand up, for you to wake up? When? You know, what needs to be said? What needs to happen for you to finally come out of your comatose state? And I've got to tell you, if God himself, with his testimony, can't get to you, can't get your attention, then I've got no hope of it. And, you know, frankly, it gets a bit wearisome speaking to an audience that is comatose. Now, there are many of you who listen, and the most of you who listen to this program routinely, regularly, or part of Yahweh's covenant family, that we have a program for. And that's the Yada Yah Radio, where we address Yahweh's testimony and nothing but his testimony. And we will continue to do that. But for the rest, I don't think there's anything that's going to awaken you. As we move from ridiculous on to other news, 3 million migrants are likely to arrive in Europe over the next year. As this is according to European Union's executive arm. That 3 million, now there's already been 1 million. And so this would be 3 million more migrants will arrive by the beginning of 2017. That's over the next year. And they say that at this point, there has been no abatement. But here's the stupidity. The Europeans' executive arm said the influx would have a small but positive effect on European Union economic output. I'd be remiss if I didn't also remind you that the brain surgeon, and literally brain surgeon, who just said that the pyramids were to store grain, which may be, and that they were designed by God, which may be as dumb as anything that anyone has ever said, also said that evolution, the theory of evolution, was a complete myth, as was the Big Bang. Now, God speaks of evolution. He says, you know, that the animals will reproduce after their kind. That, you know, birds have evolved to become more, you know, very different kinds of birds. You know, there are hundreds of breeds of dogs, all that have evolved from a prototypical dog, if you will, probably the wolf or coyote or fox or something of that nature. But it's clear that there are varieties of birds and varieties in the same species of birds, and that birds have evolved to adapt to their conditions. Now, there's a huge difference between micro and macro evolution, but if you're not smart enough to distinguish between the two and just say that all of evolution is a myth, you're an idiot. I mean, there is no proof of macroevolution, of non-life to life, and from the simplest form of life to complex life. That doesn't exist. In fact, it's impossible. But evolution, once life was conceived in its various types, those types have evolved. That's just a fact. And he says, then, the Big Bang didn't occur. And yet Yahweh uses the term Big Bang in his testimony. He says that carbon dating doesn't mean anything. He says no one has any knowledge of the age of the earth. And he says that carbon dating and all of these things really don't mean anything to a God who has the ability to create anything at any point in time. So you think that God is so devious, your God is so devious, that he would specifically create something with the appearance of being billions of years old and yet only be a few thousand years old? Why would he do that? Why would God leave fossils that are clearly hundreds of millions of years old? What, just to fool with people? Just to screw with their minds? What in the world is wrong with somebody who believes in a God that would literally try to fool people? Aha, the earth is only 6,000 years old, but I'm going to put things all over it. In fact, I'm going to create my favorite place, Jerusalem, out of limestone. That's the material I'm going to give them is limestone. And I'm going to have the ark covered in pitch, which, you know, is the both are the residue of dead animals, compressed over millions of years of time. But I'm going to do all of that just to screw with your little brains. Wow. What a sick God Ben Carson has. Now, it is mind-boggling again that such a man is considered to be a truthsayer. You know, they were interviewing the people that were thronging to Ben Carson's rallies. And these are all Republican, Christian, evangelical wackos. And they're all saying, oh, yeah, we're here because he speaks the truth. You can just look in his eyes and know this is a man who is telling us the truth. As he lies to them. Oh, my. Okay, folks. Here's the truth. The universe is somewhere between 14 and 15 billion years old. And it was created in exactly six 24-hour days from the perspective of the creator at creation. That is the nature of relativity. You can examine the facts on your own. They are available to you if you want to study the stretching of time from the remnant of the Big Bang, which is microwave radiation background noise that is measured today, stretching that time to 10 to the 12th power. And then you can do the math on 14 to 15 billion years divided by 10 to the 12th and see if you don't come to six 24-hour days. Time is relative. The theory of relativity is a proven fact. And it's amazing that we can't apply that to the story of creation told by the Creator at creation to recognize that this period of time, 14 to 15 billion years and six 24-hour days, are identical. And beyond that, the reason that it's 14 to 15 billion years is that all we know about creation is what happened after light coalesced into matter. Oh, good grief. You know, I was looking at pictures of the pyramid. If you look at the largest pyramid, there's only one gallery in it. One is called the Grand Gallery, and it's where they have the depictions of all of the things that the pharaoh would need in the afterlife, and where they would have depicted his whole methodology of how he would get using the Book of the Dead from being dead to the afterlife. And so, you know, it's a bunch of religious mumbo jumbo, but of course, according to Ben Carson, designed by God to be religious mumbo jumbo. And there's only one entrance into the King's Chamber, which is from this 45-degree inclined Grand Gallery. And the entrance to the 45-degree inclined Grand Gallery and into the King's Chamber is by an extension of a 45-degree angled passageway that intersects at the bottom of the 45-degree incline. So, if you were to put a shovel full of grain in the King's Chamber or in the top of the 45 incline in the Grand Gallery, where would it go? It would roll right back out to where you had entered. And if you put a shovel, the shovel load would all come out there. If you put 10 shovel loads, you'd be buried in it. You know, that's like having the only entrance into a silo to store grain at the bottom of the silo. And so if you were to put anything in the silo, the only thing that you could do is put put it up as high as maybe a quarter of the way up the door. Otherwise, it'd just all come out. But this is even worse because it's at a 45-degree angle. And the two 45-degree shafts that come down into the King's Chamber or into this are just simply air shafts. You can't maneuver. You couldn't send anything. Nothing would go down them. They're just air shafts so that the workers could breathe as they built these tombs. And, oh, by the way, there is a King's Chamber where the Pharaoh was buried and the Queen's Chamber in the midst of Mr. Ben Carson's food warehouses. You know, another thing just so amazing is that these pyramids were built over many, many hundreds of years by different pharaohs. And each pyramid itself took decades to build. And yet the whole prophecy, if you read about Yosef, there's going to be 7 years of very good food production, fat cows, followed by 7 years of famine, thin cows. So if you're going to have a plan that's going to work, you've got to have the storehouses up within a year. And yet these pyramids, from design to being built, took over a decade. The pyramid would be ready to store your modicum of grain during the times of famine. Ben? Good God, Ben. And those pathetic people that believe that he is telling the truth. Anyway, can you imagine the European Union saying that this influx of Muslims who don't speak English, who have never been trained or educated to do anything other than be, you know, a street vendor, to work only in an Islamic world where Muslims don't produce anything of value. I mean, there is not anything of value produced in a predominantly Islamic country. You can go to Bangladesh now, and with Western companies, they will provide them with things they want sewn, and they can sew them. So but European laws will not allow Europeans to work so cheaply, and there aren't any kind of menial labor like that being done in Europe or the Americas at this point. So what are they going to do? I mean, what are they going to do? There are no jet airplanes made in the Islamic world. They're not going to work for Airbus. There are no cars made in the Islamic world. They're not going to work for BMW or Volkswagen or Porsche, Mercedes. No, there's no military hardware being made in the Islamic world. They're certainly not going to work for any of the European defense consortiums. There are no electronic appliances that are being designed and been built in the Islamic world. No, they're being made in China. And so what are they going to do? How do you think that they're going to be anything but a parasite on your society? Russian airstrikes in Syria's Latakia province have killed a rebel commander and others, four other fighters, from a group armed by President Bashar al-Assad's foreign enemies, this report says. The attack marked the third time that Russian warplanes have targeted the 1st Coastal Division. That's a 1st Coastal Division. Can you imagine that? We know that the Free Syrian Army only exists as a collection of Mujahideen jihadist groups. We know that those groups are exclusively Sunni, and they're engaged because they don't like Shia Muslims. So these groups are groups of jihadists, Mujahideen, that are exclusively Sunni, and that they are engaged to kill Shia Muslims. and that they do not have any command and control infrastructure. They don't have, they do not have divisions. They do not have anything that would even be remotely akin to command and control. And yet we're going to use terms, the First Coastal Division of the Free Syrian Army. And this now is the Russians bombing and airstrikes those that America is arming. Now, it's one thing that America is arming them with anti-tank missiles, but they also are arming them with anti-aircraft missiles. And so how long is it going to be before one of these jihadists that America is arming with anti-aircraft missiles, with anti-personnel missiles and rockets, downs a Russian aircraft with an American weapon provided by the Americans? And what do you think is going to happen as a result of that? Or perhaps I could put it this way. When American troops are fighting side by side, as we've announced we're going to do, with this alleged Free Syrian Army, and the Russians are bombing the Free Syrian Army because they're opposed to Bashar al-Assad, and they kill Americans, then what? Or how about the case with Turkey bombing the Kurds while Americans have special forces fighting alongside the Kurds? We're arming the Kurds, and yet the Turks with American weapons are bombing the Kurds. Washington Post, by the way, finally figured this out, and we'll turn to this in a moment. We have Paul having called in from New Jersey regarding Ben Carson and the Islamic migration into Europe. Hello, Paul.
Yes, sir. Did you know that Ben Carson stabbed somebody when he was a 14-year-old boy? Just that alone, I think, excludes him from a presidential, being the president, because it's such an egregious act. I mean, as a child, I've had my fights and scuffles. I would never have considered stabbing somebody.
No. Me too. I've never attacked anybody that didn't attack me. And I had my fights and scuffles growing up, and my fights and scuffles were all defensive in nature. But I never used anything more than my hands to try to defend myself. I cannot even imagine pulling a knife on somebody and stabbing them.
Exactly, and I was always relatively honorable, like put-em-up kind of person. I would never even consider that. So there's something clearly wrong with his character. And that was the one point I wanted to make. But concerning the Muslims, mm-hmm. A lot of people think that Islam is the most dangerous ideology in the world. And I disagree with that. I think the most dangerous ideology in the world is liberalism within the West that thinks that diversity will lead us to some kind of beautiful, wonderful outcome, mm-hmm. some kind of utopia, because the formerly white, mostly Christian nations of the world are now diverse and have a polyglot of assorted people. And that's kind of will lead to Shangri-La. Those are the really dangerous ideologues.
Yeah. Paul, if you were to make the claim that the most deadly ideology in human history was socialist secular humanism, you'd be correct. While it's apparent that Muslims in the first century of Islam killed somewhere between 100 and 200 million people, and therefore as a percentage of the population, that was the deadliest religion in all of human history. There are very few records from that time because the Muslims couldn't write, so they couldn't keep records, and those that they killed obviously could tell no tales. But if you look at the last 100 years, socialist secular humanists have killed almost 200 million people.
That's true, and they would be very atheistic concerning the mm-hmm. communists and the way they mm-hmm. would transfer ethnic groups around it within the Soviet Union to deserve some kind of ethnic desire by mm-hmm. To make mm-hmm. Stalin happy, and likewise with Mao.
Yeah, keep in mind, America's national religion is socialist secular humanism, and the moral code is political correctness, and that America is the merchant of death in the world. Primary merchant of death in the world.
And I would also contend that, in a sense, they almost act like Satanists, because I would look at it this way. If you were Satan, wouldn't one of the greatest things you could possibly do is trick the Christians into doing satanic acts and thinking that that is good? I mean, they tricked the Christians into adopting torture as a means of handling prisoners. They seem to be indifferent to what happened in Abu Ghraib. Right? They seem to think waterboarding is now acceptable in the new form. Correct?
Yes.
They've also thought that it's acceptable to just go along with that, I believe, almost a Satanist George Bush, and to create this havoc. I mean, ignoring what our founder, George Washington, intended for this country of being, you know, basically minding our business and being an isolationist, and sending an army to destabilize these relatively well-run, I mean, in the Islamic world, when you think of Hussein, Gaddafi, and the Assads, they had very modern, secular countries that were doing well when you consider standard living, tolerance towards other religions, et cetera.
We'll get back to the comparison to Islam just 1 second, but I can't pass this up. George Washington was the guiding light in his life was Freemasonry. Therefore, his God was Satan. And now, if you want to look at a founding father in terms of intellect, it would have been Thomas Jefferson. Now, Thomas Jefferson knew that Paul was the first to corrupt the message of Yahusha. And so Paul, he knew that Paul was a complete fraud, and therefore he knew that the problems associated with Christianity, and that it's based on Paul's letters. But Thomas Jefferson was the one who said that there's nothing more dangerous to a nation than a standing military. That if you establish a military, and you have an established military as part of your national psyche, that every bad thing that can happen will occur. And so he is absolutely right.
And by the way, I think that's what the Third Amendment means about, the one way.
Yes, I agree. That's exactly what it says that, you know, that the ability to bear and keep and bear arms is necessary to have a militia for a nation's freedom.
No, but the Third Amendment is the one I'm referring to, and that's the one where the government cannot force you to quarter soldiers. And I just see that on a national basis, we are forced through taxation to quarter this
army
and pay taxes for it. And again, Christians go along with it. They support the Republican Party.
Right.
That spends so much of the public treasure building a military, and then they feel compelled to use it once that military used. Now,
brilliant. I never even thought of that, but that's brilliant. It is the Third Amendment that because Jefferson wouldn't even sign, would not acknowledge, would not support the Constitution because it did not have a clause preventing the establishment of a military. And but you may be right. His good friend Madison could have probably wrote the Third Amendment specifically to keep us from having an established military. We're quartering. That's what quartering means. It's to provide food and stuff. You know, I'm a pilot, and so I'm constantly reminded how much of the airspace of this country is controlled by the U.S. government and our no-fly zones that I cannot fly through. It's stunning, the amount, particularly in the West, or just how much we have devoted to our military.
And they make a cult out of it where it's part of every the other cult, the football cult, where they join the two, where when you turn on a football game, which I don't do, but nonetheless I hear about it, that it's all about, like, hero worship of our soldiers. And the soldiers are serving the most debased, evil politicians voted in by a debased, degenerate electorate.
Yeah, we just sent an article by a regular listener to this program that says that the homosexual assault in the U.S. military, man-on-man sexual assault in the U.S. military, is in the range of 270,000 as to how many sexual assaults, homosexual sexual assaults, have occurred in the U.S. military here in these past few years. There's almost as many victims of male-on-male sexual assault in the military as there are military personnel.
Well, I would call this trickle-down Satanism, or maybe even trickle-down buggery, coming down from the bugger-in-chief himself, Obama.
Correct.
And also,
correct,
if you read about the rumors about George Bush, too, he seemed to have been bisexual himself. And as I was alluding to before, they act like Satanists. Everything's been going on. And one other thing concerning this.
Well, you look at their Skull and Bones membership at Yale. And then you, which is really an Illuminist organization. And then you you look at what George Prescott Bush and George Herbert Walker, which these guys are both named after, did to aid and abet Hitler during World War II. I mean, they were the financiers of the Brown Church that brought Hitler to power. And they were the ones who encouraged Hitler to take over Poland so they'd have slave labor for the coal mines in places like Auschwitz, expressly because they had a patent to gasify coal.
Hmm. Yeah, and they may not actually be Satanists, but the results of their actions are something Satanists would love.
Now, okay, now keep in mind, and this is the, when we return to Proverbs 6 in the second hour of this show, Satan is light. He's beautiful. Satan does not want to be worshipped as Satan. That's the last thing Satan wants to be. He doesn't want to be the adversary. He doesn't want to be known as the adversary. He doesn't want to be seen as the adversary. He doesn't want anybody paying homage to him as Satan, as the adversary. He wants to present himself as God. He wants to be worshipped as if he were a God. And so when somebody is worshipping Satan as Satan actually is, they are devoted to a being of beautiful light. Now, this light is corrupting. It's counterproductive. But Satan, you know, to be a Satanist is not to be involved in an occultist, you know, bizarre religious practice where you're paying homage to the red horned guy with the, you know, the goat like head. Satan's allure is to power. Satan's allure is to be seen as enlightened.
But I would assume that through Satanism, the result would be to create hell on earth.
Mm-hmm.
And in a sense, that's what they've done to the Middle East, and now it seems like it's spreading into Europe. And this to think that this is not this diabolical, and remember the word diabolic.
Yeah.
Diabolical. The Diablo.
The Greek word for Satan, for the devil.
That the United States and the Western powers hide behind the skirts of these ISIS jihadis.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? They can't even fight like normal men, and that's why, in a sense, I respect
them. We use them as proxies.
Exactly, and that is...
And we're arming both sides. We're bombing both sides. We're arming both sides. We're allied with both sides. We're against both sides.
No, and that's what I'm saying, just the evil of that alone.
Right.
And I think this is where Putin can actually topple the Western governments without firing a shot. It's funny, the West has been out to get Putin, or at least America.
Right. Yeah.
Britain.
We've created a caricature of Putin that most Americans buy into.
Right, but now with this flooding of refugees, there's going to be a lot of people in Europe voting for the right. It could lead to the dissolution of NATO and the EU, and it can also lead to a lot of nationalists, hopefully not, you know, neo-Nazis, but hopefully decent nationalists who are going to topple their global plan. So this blowback...
Yeah, my friend IQ Arasuli, who's an Iraqi now living in Europe, has said emphatically, and I agree with him, that the 4 million Muslim refugees flooding into Europe between this year and next year will lead to anarchy. That's what it's going to lead to. It will lead absolutely and unequivocally to anarchy. And so Europe, as we know it, is going to cease to exist.
No, unless they become nationalists and just start mass deportations, which is a very popular...
I don't know. Even if they do that, the people who will take charge and do that will do so based on race, and they will do so very hatefully, and it will be the if it's not anarchy, then it will be dictatorial regimes. You know that they took a poll in France here recently, and that 40% of the French citizens want a dictator.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, they want. Well, listen. It's almost in this country with the adoration, you know, like the liking of Trump. People are looking for a strong man when you have a bunch of weak women and homosexuals running your countries. You know, Merkel, Obama, and others. I mean, you're looking for a strong man. And in a sense, this is what I've discussed about Trump.
Can I just interrupt for just one second here?
Yeah.
Because just to be clear, while I'm not fond of homosexuality, and God's clearly not fond of homosexuality, we do overemphasize homosexuality as a problem in our country. I think that the glorification of homosexuality is a problem, but whether or not somebody's a homosexual or not is fairly irrelevant.
No, I think there's a pathology to it because of, you know, homosexuality ruins relations among men.
And relations between men and women. The pathology of it is a problem, particularly when the pathology of it is celebrated as a glorious good, as it is in academia and as it is in politics,
and
in our society.
Right, and we shouldn't promote effeminacy among men because men are the ones who are on the power lines fixing your power, you know, your power. They're the ones building your building, fixing your roof, paving the roads. We always need men to do these arduous jobs, and they have to be masculine men. And that's part of another one of the pathologies of homosexuality. I mean, you don't need your flowers arranged when you're in a foxhole.
No, and you ought not have to be in the foxhole.
That too.
Only reason we're in a foxhole is because the malignant nature of political leaders, their greed and their immorality, is the only reason there are foxholes in the first place.
Indeed. All right, sir. Listen, I got to go, but thank you.
Brilliant call. Thank you.